Dr. Edward Elder is a professional teaching fellow in politics and international relations at the Faculty of Arts at Auckland University. He's got a PhD in politics and international relations. And, well, we've certainly got a lot of politics. And now with Winston as our foreign affairs minister, we may have enhanced or not international relations. We'll wait and see. Edward, tēnā koe, ko Dale tēnā.
Kia ora.
Hey, great to have you share some time with us. Obviously, this is sort of newish, isn't it? This three-pronged coalition arrangement. It took a little bit to broker, but I do remind everyone that don't be mathematical morons, as Winston said, as he said hi and welcome. It didn't take 40 days, although it felt like 4 months, the length of time there. What did you make of where we're at? How do you think ACT, National and New Zealand First make their coalition agreement work over the 3-year parliamentary term? Is this something reasonably new from your overview, Edward?
Yes, it is. It depends how you look at it, I guess you could say. From a purely structural standpoint, they do have mechanisms in place to make sure that they themselves are on track, so to speak, where they've got a coalition committee where they sit down with the leadership and the leader of the House and make sure that they're making progress every so often to make sure that they're on track with those two agreements. And then obviously, as every coalition agreement has had since, other than the first one, for obvious reasons, that one didn't last the full term, they have the agree to disagree clause, which basically means that in certain situations, even though they are in cabinet together, they can publicly disagree with one another on certain issues. So from that standpoint, you know, they do have the mechanisms in place and that flexibility that has sort of been a growing aspect of our MMP system. How they will actually work together will be a bit harder to tell, because as you say, this is the first time we have had three, you know, parties in cabinet at once. And as we've already seen, there is somewhat of a, shall we say, contentious relationship between the minor parties in particular, in part because, especially in recent years, to look at this more from a political marketing standpoint, the two parties kind of fill the same lane these days, actually having broadened themselves out to being a more, I guess you'd say, anti-establishment freedoms more broadly party. They have taken on a bit more of that New Zealand First position of the anti-establishment party. So in that sense, it could get quite contentious, I guess you'd say.
Well, they're throwing the term woke in, and we've overstepped the mark. We've thrown Reo Māori out into places it wasn't intended to be. I mean, all organisations that operate in this country have a responsibility to adhere to the treaty, don't they? And at this stage, we get the impression that the coalition government feels it's their right to change the way that is interpreted. What are your thoughts there, Edward?
I mean, I'm going to sort of parrot Dr. Carwin Jones on this from Victoria University in Wellington, in saying that a lot of what I'm seeing in the actual agreement itself, there will be obviously changes made, especially around things like, you know, language used. They have said that they are going to, not to get too specific, but I think it's repeal Section 7AA of the Omotanariki Act of 1989, which is around, you know, recognising the importance of the principles of the treaty in that sense. A lot of what I'm seeing, though, is in the document, the two documents, is around, shall we say, sort of in exploring certain aspects as well. So there's a lot of the, I guess you'd say, symbolic ideas of we are going to investigate this. Whether that actually goes through or not, I'm a little bit more sceptical, partly because National in particular are more of a management party than a reform party. And in that sense, what I mean by that is they tend to try to tinker around the edges without making major changes. Even Helen Clark has said in the past, and David Seymour has sort of backed her up on this, although more from a position of not seeing this as a positive, is that Labour has a tendency to make big reforms. National tends to push back until they pass and then say, well, we'll do it as well, but a little, you know, with tinkering around the edges, a little bit different, maybe, as they'd call it, a little bit more efficiently. So, and then in that sense, not making major changes. So in this sense, in the same avenue, I think that might be the case as well, where national, maybe make some changes around the edges, but it won't be as large as maybe even the was sort of suggested previously or in the during the campaign.
Tenaki, you would have watched a few political cycles, no doubt, as you accumulated your sound academic record there, my friend. Are you comfortable using the terms left to right? Do you think that they're helpful to the general public when we say that this party's centre-left or far-left or far-right, etc.? Have we as a nation had politically had a lurch to the right?
I mean, yes, I am. I mean, I guess we can use that for certain cases. It's a little bit harder with parties like Te Pāti Māori, for example. It's a little bit more tricky just because they tend to be focusing on a different sort of perspective. But I think we have had, and the results would suggest we've had a lurch to the right, generally speaking, a sort of reaction to the previous government. And that's almost a sense of, you know, the 2020 election being such an outlier that there was a sort of massive swing the other direction. And that's partly due to things like delivery as well. It's not just a case of the public seeing what was on offer, shall we say, from National, ACT, New Zealand, and saying, this is what we want, tangibly, so to speak, and more a case of just change more generally. Whatever that change is, it can't be the sort of message that you would have seen, you know, on the, you know, people on the street interviews and that sort of thing is, you know, it can't be any worse than what we have right now. And part of that is to do with that sort of lack of delivery, you know, sense of lack of delivery from the previous government.
And some say that when they evaluate the campaign, Labor might realise that there was a perception they stood for nothing.
Exactly. Well, so that was it. Funny, I actually was sort of talking about this in a presentation recently. If you look at the last, basically since 2008, other than 2020, National has won a plurality of the party vote, basically. They've beaten Labour in the party vote. And it was looking that way in 2020 as well, outside of, before COVID hit, basically. Centre-left parties generally have to moderate more in order to win office than centre-right parties. Part of that is the more diverse coalition. So in that sense, they do need to moderate, but there is a difference between being a moderate party or a moderate centre-left party, for example, and to use an international example, the sort of New Labour Tony Blair, 1997, in the Great Britain, as an example of that, who had sort of these actual, like, tangible, these are the moderate ideas that we're coming to the table with. And what we saw here, especially this year, was it's more of a sense of, you know, a party, again, the policy bonfire being an obvious example of this, but even where there were policies that would you might consider more moderate, it was more of a case of, well, would the public like this? Does the public like this? Maybe they'll like this. And it seemed to be more of a reaction than a proactive approach to being again, moderate centre-left party.
Māori feel threatened. You would have seen some of the rhetoric surfacing through the media, this three-pronged attack. Anti-Māori sentiment or curbing Māori ambition seems to be a vote winner, which from our people's perspective is very disappointing. What does that say of New Zealand?
I'm not sure I'd be the best person to talk to about this sort of broader sentiment, but we have seen internationally as well, I guess you could say, a sort of move towards, we'll use this, and I don't know if it's a derogatory term, but the sort of populist approach of sort of a zero-sum game in the communication of certain political parties who do want to play on sort of, tensions between people of different backgrounds or different demographics or different ethnicities, in the sense of either explicitly saying or insinuating, or to put it more negatively, dog whistling, is that if certain people are getting certain things, then you are not, right? So in that sense, it does sort of play into this idea of the zero-sum game of group of people are getting something, then you're not, and that's why, you know, things are hard for you right now. And things like the cost of living, for example, just pure economics, does, I guess you say, heightens that to a degree as well, where when things may be a little bit more economically harmonious, then other aspects may be a little bit easier to sort of keep on a level as well.
We've seen what should only be described as a slightly uncomfortable signing ceremony at the end of last week with these three players, and all of them got pretty healthy egos, Luxon, Seymour and Winston. So, I mean, a lot of people think in 3 years, gee, we're lucky to last 3 weeks or 3 months. do you think they'll go the distance?
Well, again, I've mentioned the sort of mechanisms they have in place to keep it going. As I said, the issue more than anything is there is a growing understanding of a former mentor of mine called the cost of coalitions for minor parties, in the sense that the minor parties tend to bear the brunt, the negative ramifications of being in government, right? In the sense that, you know, because they're sort of compromising and they maybe have more ideologically fervent supporters, and because they don't want, they might lose their identity, they tend to actually lose support at a greater rate than the major parties, right? So especially later on in the term, you know, New Zealand First and ACT, again, as I said, are anti-establishment parties, are probably going to want to push back against National and be seen publicly to doing so later in the term. Whether they can still go the distance, it's a little bit hard to tell. Again, we saw with David Seymour, you know, during the campaign, talk about providing confidence but not supply, I think it was, potentially. That mindset of, you know, trying to position yourself as, you know, somewhat distant from the major party may become more prevalent later in the term. And given the sort of less flexibility than we normally see with, like, enhanced confidence and supply agreements, in other words, ministers outside of cabinet for the minor parties, that might make things trickier. Winston Peters was already starting to position himself like that in early 2020 before COVID hit. But then when COVID hit, things sort of changed. So we could see that later on, I think.
Well, we've got a bit of time to work through here. It's picking the success of this coalition arrangement's almost like choosing the trifecta of the Melbourne Cup. Very, very tough, Ed. Very tough. Hey, nice meeting you, man. Thanks very much for sharing some time with us. Hope we can talk again in the new year. All the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Edward Elder.